This episode is brought to you by HivePass. HivePass is the latest in membership management software that brings a radically different approach to how members join your organization, their experience as a member, and how you interact with them. Built by not only an app developer, but also a mountain biker, HivePass was made by a trail user for trail users. With an app-based platform, instant digital membership cards, ability to send push notifications to members, in-app trail status reports unique to your organization, HivePass is building the next generation of membership management software for your organization. Future additions to HivePass include an event system, automated custom trailhead signs, and much more. HivePass has been live in New Zealand and Australia for a few years, but just launched in Canada, and with this announcement, the United States. Over 50,000 trail users already use HivePass to support their local trail organization. HivePass is the world's first app-based membership management software built specifically for trail organizations. For all of the details, check out hivepass.app. That's www.hivepass.app. Or download the HivePass app today. You're listening to Frontlines, a podcast for the people that truly make mountain biking happen. Not the riders, racers, or product designers, but the builders, advocates, and the often forgotten board members of your local mountain bike trail association. My guest for this episode is part of an organization that I just started working with that I'm really excited about. They're known as the Outdoor Council of Canada, or the OCC, and they're a certifying body, amongst other things. They also do advocacy work, and we get into that in more detail in our discussion. But my role with them is as one of their instructors. And they offer courses for various educators, outdoor leaders, often focused on youth programs, but not necessarily. A great example is teachers that are looking to bring their kids outside, but want to do so in a safe way with a little bit of training and an understanding on how to do that. A great way to kind of enter that world is by getting the Outdoor Council of Canada Field Leader Hiking Certification. It's a two-day course, and it kind of highlights just some of the responsibilities that it takes as an outdoor leader. I think what I often see working as a guide, an outdoor educator, is a lot of people take folks outside with good intentions. You know, I see this a lot with school programs, where a teacher will bring out their class, but they might not necessarily have any professional training on how to actually manage groups outside. And there's a big difference between going outside with your friends, family, and going outside with, you know, a pack of 15 to 30 teenagers or kids or whatever age folks. And so this field leader course is kind of a way to help folks understand the responsibilities that exist when it comes to leading groups outside. A timely episode because at the end of this month, so May 31st and June 1st, so over that weekend, May 31st, June 1st, I'm going to be offering a field leader certification course. It's a two-day course, and it's going to be offered on the North Shore, North Vancouver. So if you happen to live in the Lower Mainland or if you're in British Columbia, and this course might be something that you'd like to add to your certifications, or if you know somebody that might be interested, please pass this along. I've added a link to the registration page down in the show notes as well. It'd be great to have a couple folks who are kind of involved in the mountain bike world also dip their toes into the Outdoor Council of Canada world. Now, without any further delay, though, I'm your host, Brent Hillier, and this is episode 98 of Frontlines. I'm joined by Franz Planger. He's the Executive Director of the Outdoor Council of Canada. Thanks for joining me.
You're most welcome. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So what I wanted to start with is just what is the Outdoor Council of Canada? Give us a kind of an idea of what the organization is and what it does.
The Outdoor Council of Canada is a small not-for-profit, which is also relatively young, which has two main roles. One role, which has been what the organization started as, is a certifying body. And the second role, which emerged much more around 2019, is to essentially serve as an industry association. So advocating for outdoor programs and addressing systemic barriers to the outdoor community in Canada.
Awesome. And how did you kind of get involved with just outdoor education in general?
I am from Quebec. And back in the day when I was doing my college studies, which is called Cégep over there, I was doing my sciences studies to prepare to become an engineer. And I did a optional course, and it's called the 18 Days Experiential Education course. And yeah, during that course, you leave from the parking lot of the college, you go north on your bikes, then you hike, then you paddle. You do a bit of solo, you do a bit of sea kayaking, a bit of climbing, a bunch of other stuff that I forget right this second. And then you come back down south in the big canoe, Rabaska canoe. And then you finish by jogging right back into the parking lot where you all started 18 days later. So that changed my life. I was in one direction before the course, and after the course, I'm in a different direction that leads to today. And then essentially after a couple years of reflecting, what do I want to do with my life? I did my studies as an outdoor guide, and then I ended up working for organizations like Outward Bound or the National Outdoor Leadership School. And, you know, as many outdoor professionals, I roamed a little bit left, right, up, down, a few organizations here and there, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah. Awesome. What a cool program. Like, I always love trips that really feel like they start from your front door, right? I think it harkens back to, like, you know, a Bilbo Baggins kind of hobbit experience, right? Of like walking out that front garden and starting your adventure. I think so much of what we do as outdoor enthusiasts kind of requires this like secondary transportation, whether it's getting in a car, getting on an airplane, that kind of thing. So it's very cool that really started from the school and off you went for this kind of big kind of circumnavigation to end up back where you started. It's so neat.
Yeah, there and back again, as they say. And you know, yeah, what you're talking about, this concept of leaving from your door. I mean, I've done my fair share of remote expeditions. I often see the conversation kind of pushing towards those like more intense logistics. And here I'm thinking particularly like outdoor learning, let's say. I remember a particular conversation I was having with somebody in a school a couple of years ago. And they're like, yeah, it's so expensive to take the bus and to go to the outdoor center of the school board, blah, blah, blah. And just for fun, I went on Google Maps and I saw that if they cross the street and go down the block, they reach a green area that follows a riverbed that goes to another green. Like, they had so much outdoor space, so many outdoor spaces available within walking, biking radius of the school. I don't know. For some reason, people equate outdoors as that image. And even though it's a beautiful part of the story, outdoors is literally outside the door.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think for me, what I've kind of gathered with learning and working with the Outdoor Council of Canada is that kind of the philosophy is not about going far. It's about exposure, and any exposure to the outdoors is exposure to the outdoors, and really thinking about what's in your surrounding neighborhood and getting people just outside for a little bit. A lot of the programs, the certifications that the OCC, the Outdoor Council of Canada, offer are aimed at teachers, scout leaders, and really just kind of enabling them to get outside for relatively short periods of time. Like, this is not like a guiding certification in the same sense of like the Association of Canadian Mountain Guides or the American Association of Mountain Guides or the International Association of Mountain Guides. This is really just about kind of facilitating this relatively close proximity, simple outdoor trips for, it kind of feels like mostly kids, but I think folks of all ages. Was that always kind of the philosophy of the Outdoor Council of Canada? Or did it kind of start maybe with a bigger scope and move to that perspective? Or was this really the main principle?
Yeah, so the Outdoor Council of Canada started as a response to a couple tragedies. So in the early 2000s, there were two significant tragedies on outdoor education trips. And there was a huge pushback on that in schools, particularly in Alberta, in the western part of the country. But in 2003, I was doing my studies in Quebec, and one of the tragedies did ripple all the way across the country. The first thing that the founders of the OCC did, you know, brought together a bunch of outdoor folks, and they're seeing, oh my God, outdoor education is really taking a step back here and being pushed back on. There's a great risk of losing these very meaningful experiences in Canadian schools. So let's do something about it. And the first thing that was determined is, why not do a training that provides the foundations of outdoor leadership, how to plan a trip, how to adapt to your group, how to manage your group, how to assess risk and apply defenses, and then how to reflect on what you've done to improve next time. So yeah, at the beginning, the course was very tailored to schools and to teachers and to camps. Over time, what became a realization is that when you look at the foundations of outdoor leadership, well, those apply to any context where a person brings another person in a natural environment. So that applies for outdoor clubs. It does apply so I use the word guide the same way that the tourism industry uses it, which is to offer a outdoor tourism experience. Even when you're in a guide offering day trips and things like that, like still the foundations of outdoor leadership is important. So yeah, the certification program expanded beyond schools and summer camps. And right now it's actually delivered to a wide diversity of individuals that lead groups outside. And it's historically, it's in 13 post-secondary institutions, some of them training outdoor professionals. Yeah, so that's the root of it, and that's the focus of it, and it is the foundation. And the thing with the foundation is that it's relevant pretty much at any stage in your career. You apply the foundations nonetheless. What you end up doing is you apply them at a much deeper level and whatnot. So, and that's one of the pieces with the Field Leader Program, is that it has packaged the practices that are done by competent guides, competent outdoor leaders, into something that's very easy to digest, very easy to understand and implement at that foundational level. And then you can build from that.
The accident you're referring to affected, you know, one of the sectors of the kind of guiding and outdoor industry that I work in quite predominantly. With I teach avalanche courses in the winter, and so the avalanche industry was very much shaken by that incident as well. It was seven school kids who passed away in an avalanche in Rogers Pass. When that happened, you know, give us the timeline of kind of when that accident occurred and when the Outdoor Council of Canada was kind of formed in response to that.
Yeah, well, actually, there was a delay. So I'm speaking about right now, I'm talking as a secondary source. I wasn't there at the time, but essentially it took until 2008. In November of 2008, to create the organization of the Outdoor Council of Canada in response to, amongst of one of the incident is the Rogers Pass incident. One of the piece I want to mention, which I think is very, very powerful, is that in the other tragedy, which obviously tragedies touch family. So the family that was involved in that tragedy and lost a child were actually part of the formation of the OCC and directly engaged in 2008. And their belief in the value of outdoor education is so strong that despite that incredible tragedy, they still saw the need for a program like the Field Leader Program and to give these foundational skills to anyone that brings a group outside. So, we come in response to dramatic situations. And also we take seriously, you know, the responsibility that comes with sharing those experiences with people on the land. There's a lot of meaning and I would say power to the experience for the participants and whatnot. But there's also, it's an important responsibility as a leader, and it's not one to take lightly. The beauty of it all is that it doesn't need to be scary. It's not that hard to apply effective practices. But if you don't know, it's definitely playing with fire.
Yeah, there's so much in the outdoors that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And it's that uncertainty that gets people into trouble rather than, you know, sometimes what are really perceived risks in a lot of ways. You know, I see it a lot when I'm backpack guiding with various school programs and you get a really well-intentioned teacher kind of coming with a group of students and they might, you know, backpack and might be a very accomplished outdoor recreationist in and of themselves, but they're not necessarily one that's done any kind of outdoor leadership before. And there's a huge difference between, you know, getting yourself and a friend out on a camping trip and then taking, you know, 15, 30 kids outside for an afternoon or for something even longer, like a multi-day backpacking trip. Why do you think there is a bit of a lack of understanding from folks that this isn't the same thing, that there is a different application as an outdoor leader versus as a recreationist?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure I have a great answer in the sense of like, you know, a strong foundation of, well, it actually comes from here or here the factors explain that. Where my brain goes when you ask the question, so I think back on leadership studies. So that's one area that I studied fairly extensively, like leadership theories. And a fairly common trope when we look at managers is like, it's not because you have somebody that's a high performer on your team at the office that they'll make a good manager. Mm. I don't know, a classic is like, oh, you have this salesperson that is like just raking in the dough. Perfect. Let's make them the sales team manager. And then performance suffers. So they're not necessarily the same skill set. Leadership is not the same skill set as practice. So I think, and that is not just that like not connecting those dots automatically is not unique to the outdoor community or outdoor reality. It's fairly common in many, many contexts. So I think that's one factor. I also think that another factor that's probably important is just the overall invisibility, I would say, of the outdoor sector within Canadian society. So let me qualify a bit what I mean by that. Is that I used to be a volleyball coach. I coach when I forget the name of the program, but you know, the Sports Canada program, for coaches when it was being implemented. I'll just mention within the sports in Canada, there were program for coaches and you learned, aspects such as theory, practice, and so on and so forth. Nowadays, there's a fairly decent understanding that if you want to coach even a little league team, there's a few things that's good to learn. And there's also an easy pathway to learn those things. And as a result, the role of being a coach, I personally believe that that role is probably slightly more respected than 20 years ago. I think overall society has a lot of, you know, it's easy to be hard on coaches and referees and things like that. But there's a certain understanding that you don't just go from, being good at hitting a ball to being good at coaching. And I think that that program and a different sport federation in place that support all those teams, I think that's a huge factor that makes it that it's easy for people to access the right foundational knowledge.
And do you think maybe that that's not there in the outdoor world as much?
I think that the outdoor community is replete with fabulous organizations, fabulous training, fabulous resources, amazing people that are passionate, that do incredible work. And we are, on average, we're more fragmented than other comparable groups. So I look at like sports organization, for example. They're a lot more coherent. Now, I'm not saying that sports organizations like all get along better with each other and don't have their arguments. They absolutely do, but they're more coherent. So we're more fragmented. And then also when you start to look at more the policy level, the funding level, again, on average in Canada, there isn't coherent frameworks, structures, policies that support the outdoor community, the providers, the outdoor sector overall, or the outdoor industry. And furthermore, within the broader Canadian society, the outdoor activities, they remain unrecognized in like many data systems, in funding structure, in regulatory frameworks, and policy language. So I'll give you one example of that. Right now, as I said earlier, the OCC is advocating to address barriers to outdoor programs. And right now we have funding for a project that focuses on outdoor tourism. So through this project, we are looking at a document which is called the Federal Tourism Growth Strategy, which was published in July 2023. And that's the plan for Canada to grow its tourism industry. And within that document, there's five priorities, one of which is called Embrace Recreation and the Great Outdoors, which at first glance can look amazing because it's a priority. But when you start to read the words within the plan, you can see that the entirety of the plan is about building trails, which is good. Like it's great to have funding for trails. However, it doesn't talk about the providers and the operators, the guides, those that bring people on the land in a safe way and in a sustainable way, like environmental stewardship, et cetera, and are able to present an experience that's enhanced compared to what, you know, a tourist on their own can just do. So this, literally in the document, outdoor guides, there's a sentence that lists folks, organizations that relate to this priority. And then it says, and related services. And here's the problem with that. There's actually $104 million dedicated to this plan. And I was in a meeting in Ottawa with the assistant deputy minister that's responsible for this strategy. And I was part of a tourism delegation, and there was somebody from the accommodation world, like hotels, that said, you know, $104 million, that's barely one hotel. It's not going to change the game. The entire time in my head, I was like, do you know what we could do with $104 million? Heck, with a third of that money for the outdoor industry in Canada, we could transform outdoor tourism and really propel Canada as a number one country for nature-based tourism. However, that's not going to happen as long as we are in the related services category. So That's what I mean. We have the most powerful thing we can do as passionate outdoor people and outdoor organization is A, come together and work together as everywhere we can, even when we disagree. And then B, engage with the different governments and institutions so that they can see the value we provide to society. And then they can also see the different changes that they need to make so that we can be better supported. And those changes don't need to be that big. Like, it's not necessarily about more money within the federal tourism growth strategy. It's about adding a couple words like outdoor guides or outdoor guiding businesses. And then it would be so much easier to do product development in different parts of British Columbia, for example.
Do you think or do you see the Outdoor Council of Canada, like, is it an even split in what they're doing with the certifications versus with the advocacy? Is there kind of two, focuses of the board? Like, how does the daily workflow of the organization kind of work through all of this? Like, is one of these initiatives a higher priority, or are they both kind of, what's the division of resources, I guess, amongst these two things in the organization?
Yeah. If you think of it as departments, they are separate departments within an organization. But they reinforce each other. Both of them address barriers, one of them by providing specific skills and foundational skills to get people started. And that's a gap in Canada, like in regards to outdoor leadership. Before the field leader program was developed, like Hike Ontario had something for its leaders, but I'm not aware of anybody that had something for actual like outdoor leaders at the foundational level. So there's addressing the gap there. And then the more industry association side of things is, again, addressing gaps, but more at the policy level and advocacy. Now, that department right now is supported by grants and funding. So right now, that part is going very, very strong because we have a funded project. But the Outdoor Council of Canada, as I said earlier, we are a young organization. We're like, 2000? I won't do math on the podcast, but the listener can do their own math. Yeah, we are in a transition stage where we want to increase the funding we can access, but we also want to grow our membership. In the coming year, we're going to develop the category that's called associate membership, so organizations. And the idea here is we want to create a reality where the OCC, the core staff team of the OCC, so about six employees, are being funded through our membership fees and our course delivery fees. So that means that the outdoor community drives our work. And that no matter what happens, we have a core team that keeps on pushing for the interest of outdoor programs and those that offer experiences outside. And obviously, we're going to consistently ask for additional fundings to grow our staff team and things like that. But really, I believe it's important that the Outdoor Council of Canada at the core is supported by the outdoor community so that the outdoor community is in control of its destiny. We're not there yet. I mean, the pandemic, when I became executive director in November 2020, midst of the pandemic hit us really, really hard. We were the classic story of an organization that had invested a lot of resources in 2019 with fantastic hopes for 2020. And it was a rude awakening. There's a lot of ground to be covered. But if I look back in the past couple of years, what we've managed to accomplish with the limited resources we have, it's actually kind of encouraging.
Yeah, I think a lot of organizations have had their struggles, especially over the last few years with the pandemic and a number of other things as well. Is there, as an organization that is Canadian wide, coast to coast, you've got representation on the board from various parts of the country. You know, you've got a director from Ontario and British Columbia and the East Coast and so forth. Does that create challenges with having to try to, create this program that is nationally recognized? Or is that really what makes it a strong organization?
I personally don't see it as a challenge for the program, the certification program. The way I have worked as an outdoor professional in almost every province in the country and a little bit internationally. And the foundational principles behind the craft, I like to call it a craft, that's my own word, but it really speaks to me. The foundational principles remain, and they are applicable from coast to coast to coast, what we teach in our program. We live in a confederation, which that at the advocacy level has created challenges for sure. But I mean, we have been a confederation since 1866. We're not the first organization that tries to create a connection, horizontal coordination from coast to coast to coast for a sector of society and advocates for that. So there are pathways, there are ways to do it. There are multiple advancements that progress that we made in the past year that's encouraging. And yeah, it's going to take some time to really become this organization that can provide meaningful support across the province, across the country. And then what's needed for the outdoor community is that in every single province, there's also a provincial, at least one provincial organization that's really strongly present and supportive, and then can tie to the federal level. That's how it works in Canada, and we're moving in that direction.
You know, looking ahead for the Outdoor Council of Canada, what's on the horizon in the next, you know, 5, 10, 20 years? Like, where is this organization headed? What are some things that the board is kind of thinking about in the future?
Yeah, well, I can't speak to the board because the board has not yet reached a final position on that question. It's actually reflecting at that level. What I can speak to would be projections from where we are. I do expect the direction to remain fairly similar or keep the same bearing, to, you know, overemphasize an outdoor metaphor just for fun. The field leader program, the certification program, continue to deliver the courses, grow the program and the number of courses offered. Key values that inform the field leader program is accessibility and affordability. And we really believe strongly in those values. The downside of that, in a very pragmatic way, is that for every course that is being delivered, the OCC does not receive a lot of money. We use an independent instructor model. So in order for us to reach the financial size that we need to reach to have the impact we need to have, we would need to scale the certification program like at a massive scale. So that's where this other category of membership, of associate membership, is really an important part of the future of the OCC. Accessibility and affordability is also important there, and that's why we're using a tier system where the pricing is based on how much revenue is made by this organization. So it literally goes from $75 a year to be a member to, if you're a multi-million dollar corporation, you know, delivering trips, it's $5,000. So yeah, really growing that membership piece, but organizational members won't join if there isn't real value. So really focusing on, right now we're focusing on helping outdoor tourism takes the central space it deserves in Canada's tourism industry and strategy. And I'll spend a second there just to provide a bit more detail. We were in a conversation with Destination Canada a couple of weeks ago, and Destination Canada has a plan that's called Plan 2030. And you look at the document, and it's roughly 70% of the images are of people outside and outdoor tourism, essentially. And then we meet with their data director, and we're like, we want to talk about the data gap in outdoor tourism. And the conversation more or less starts with, what's the definition of outdoor tourism? That's how far back we are right now, our industry. Destination Canada, which is the organization responsible for collecting data on the tourism industry in Canada and plasters outdoor activities everywhere they can to market to the world, doesn't even know what the outdoor tourism industry is. And then we look at their data set, and they have this brand new map tool that's coming out. It's a fantastic tool, and they have this new data collective hub. They're doing amazing work. It's really exciting to see what's coming up with Destination Canada. But when you go and look at the map tool, I'm going to take Banff, for example. It was impossible to look at their map. Imagine a Google map, but has pre-populated pins for like tourism businesses. It was impossible to see outdoor businesses in Banff. I could see breweries, though. And it's not that those businesses weren't there. It's that they were lumped into the category of recreation and entertainment, I believe. Mm. So we have a categorization problem. And that's an example of something we are actively working to solve right now. And a few years from now, Destination Canada will publish data sets about the tourism industry. And within their reports, they will talk about outdoor guides. They will talk about outdoor businesses. They will talk about mountain bike providers and things like that. So that's the type of work that we're doing. At the education level, we are working with, so the organization is called Take Me Outside, Learning for a Sustainable Future, Outdoor Learning School and Store, Physical Health Education Canada. So there are five organizations, and we're part of a collective, and we are specifically focusing on supporting school administrators in regards to outdoor learning. And one of the things I'm actively working right now is to find funding for this project. But yeah, in 5 years from now, or in 5 years from the moment I managed to find enough funding, essentially our collective of organization, we have a bunch of really great resources and training for school administrators, like think principals, vice principals, superintendents, etc. And we will be essentially like providing that training and resources across the country, so that when you have a passionate teacher or a few passionate teachers in a school that talk to their administrators, often teachers are, it's not uncommon that teachers are lucky and their administrator really understand and can be supportive. But it's also not uncommon that the administrator, it actually feels foreign and doesn't know where to start. Well, we're meeting that gap so that at least the administrator can be like, oh, okay, I understand what you're talking about and what my role is, and I can support that. And particularly how this fits within the curriculum goals of the school and the strategic plan of the school. What's coming up this fall that's really, really exciting, and that's not for the OCC, but it's through the done by our partner, Take Me Outside, actually Canada's first ever outdoor learning conference for school administrators will be held in Banff in October. So that's part of the work we're doing as a collective. Take Me Outside is taking the lead for that particular conference. They deserve all the credit for the great work, but we're working as a collective within that broader picture. And then, you know what? I'll finish with one quick. 20 years from now, just like there is a minister of sport, like we learned today with Mr. Adam Van Coverden, well, there will be a minister of the outdoors in Canada. That's what we're moving towards. Canada is an outdoor country. We have the best natural spaces on the planet, the most inviting social environment for visitors. It's part of our heritage as a modern nation, outdoor activities. Outdoor activities need to get back into the place that they deserve in this country of ours.
It's really quite amazing. Like, you know, when you think of what we've kind of facilitated in Canada for outdoor spaces, it's really very organic. Like this recognition that we have as a country in all sorts of different activities. You know, you look to mountain biking, and there's aspects of mountain biking in which Canada is dominant from a competitive level. You know, you look at free ride mountain biking, for example. There was an era there where every single amazing professional mountain biker was Canadian. You know, they would hold a competition every year. They still do in Utah, and the entire field was just Canadians going down to the States. And there's other aspects. I mean, the canoe being synonymous with Canadian culture and such a key kind of piece of our heritage as Canadians. All of these wonderful things that we have are Banff and these national parks that are absolutely gorgeous, whether it's Gros Morne in Newfoundland or the Pacific Rim National Park on Vancouver Island. But it hasn't happened through any kind of formal support or recognition. It's just happened. And I think that's owed to the passion that I think people are just passionate about this aspect of our country. But imagine what we can do and where we can go when we put just a little bit more funding and a little bit more care and a little bit more attention towards these things. I mean, the potential that is there is massive.
Oh, the potential is indeed massive. I would say I can quantify that easily to $50 million. Yeah, just in provincially, in the sense that when I left Quebec to focus as an outdoor professional, the outdoor community in Quebec was fragmented and disempowered. And the future of the outdoors didn't look great in Quebec. I came back years later in my role with the Outdoor Council of Canada, and the game had changed. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that happened, and yeah, like documents sent to the government and things like that. But the number one change that I noticed is that the people in an organization that used to bicker with each other decided to work together at the next level. And I say $50 million because in the province of Quebec, now it's 2 or 3 years ago, but the government of Quebec essentially announced a funding for like regional parks, summer camps, outfitters, like outdoor tourism. Like it's actually like multifaceted. Like each envelope is specific, but when you look at the whole picture, it's quite holistic. And it amounts to about $50 million of funding for the outdoor sector. And that would have been unthinkable just 10 years earlier. So from what I'm seeing, Quebec is the province in the country that, and I'm not talking about territories here. I'm talking about provinces. So province in the country that's the most organized and makes the most advancement. And I think British Columbia is really not far behind. There's great, great, great work being done in British Columbia, which is really encouraging. And I agree with you, right? Like it's people that are passionate that made amazing things happen. And you know, when you're talking about things happening organically and connection to our heritage, what it made me think of and brought me back to is that when you're doing an outdoor activity, it's an opportunity to be on the land and build your own relationship with the land. And really, the land does most of the work, and you give the land enough time, you're going to develop quite a meaningful relationship with the land that's deep and it's multisensorial and whatnot. And, you know, like this idea of relationship to the land and the land, not just as property and whatnot, this is a core way of understanding life and the world on the continent of Turtle Island. And this is what Indigenous nations are consistently saying, like, you know, we all have a relationship to the land and we have duties and responsibilities. And I think outdoor activities are just one avenue where there's that chance for each person to live that and nourish that. And I think it matters a lot.
I get many opportunities to speak to my member of the Legislative Assembly, which is our provincial representatives here in British Columbia. And she's wonderful. She provides time for me to sit down with her and kind of share what I'm seeing I'm very much boots on the ground in the province as far as what's happening within the provincial parks, both as somebody that recreates with their family, but also somebody that works as a guide and an outdoor educator in a bunch of really the most popular parks in the province. And she's so lovely to kind of listen and hear my feedback. There was a housekeeping bill that went through the provincial assembly, just in kind of a couple name changes, some adjustment of boundaries within provincial parks, nothing major, just things that happen every single year in kind of standard government procedures. But it's an opportunity to share and talk about parks. And it was really nice to kind of hear from a bunch of MLAs across the province about how valuable parks are. And it didn't matter what political party they were affiliated. They all saw the value of these park spaces. But then fast forward a month, 2 months later, and the government puts forward its budget and no additional funding for BC parks, or at least no significant additional funding for BC parks. Why is it that government kind of talks this talk of how important our park spaces and our outdoor spaces are, but don't seem to put their money where their mouth is? Like, why is this such a battle for those of us in advocacy and for groups like the OCC and for trail associations across Canada to continue to fight for additional funding from various government organizations?
Well, I'll share with you personal thoughts with the caveat that, you know, you asked me the question in a manner that might convey that I know the answer. And I want to start with being very, very clear that very likely I don't know the answer. But here are my personal thoughts. And here are the things that inform the actions I take as executive director of the OCC. The government has multiple responsibilities, and it has a lot of priorities, a lot of goals. And, you know, like, I'm going to say things in a very simplistic way. So I want to ask permission from the audience. Like, I'm probably going to say things that are wrong in the details, but the gist of it hopefully is close enough. Like, essentially, the government is wielding and partitioning power and resources and things like that. And ultimately, it needs to regain political power and be elected and whatnot. And also, we live in a capitalist society where, like, the economy is a very important thing. So, like, we are such passionate people, often other people, that, like, we're like, oh, that moment outside or that ride on the trail is so powerful, but, like, those don't translate into KPIs, key performance indicators. And at the end of the day, we need to understand the priorities, the language, and the focus of those in power, and we need to bring to them an enticing vision of why we are needed. And it's not that we're not needed. It's not that we're not providing incredible value to society. We are. We just need to be able to present that in a way that's more powerful and more directly linked to, you know, essentially, like, well, if you provide funding here, you will gain that. Or if you don't do that, here's the cost of inaction. Okay, that's all conceptual. How does that inform the work that I do? Well, like, one of the most powerful message that we have that we can send to the government is that the outdoor community, the outdoor recreation industry, the outdoor sector is an underdeveloped economic vehicle that is sustainable economy, that is diversified economy, that is pan-Canadian economy. Sorry, my calendar ring in case the listeners heard that. And yeah, we have a good economic message. And guess what? Like, our business happens in nature. Like, the infrastructure of our industry is nature. And in order to offer the best possible experience in nature, we need quality infrastructure. That means a healthy ecosystem. So there's a lot and a lot and a lot of alignment between the professional craft, those businesses, the economy, environmental stewardship, et cetera. So, yeah, I think, and right now the OCC is mostly doing that through tourism. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the potential for the future, because what happens when the government doesn't just look at parks as a service to its citizens, but actually as spaces that actually contribute to the economy? But then we also manage the parks in a way, we all understand that like visitor management is essential to keep the parks healthy. Well, guess what? Outdoor guides are prepared to support effective visitation management, because one guide can bring at least three times as many people outside in the same space than just random visitors, and have like a lesser impact, you know? So, yeah, so that's my answer. It's like, understand, like, we want to get funding and power from governments. So we need to engage with governments and present them an enticing vision. I mean, the sports community did that. It used to be called Own the Podium. We invested hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that a very small portion of Canadians can stand in front of the world holding a piece of metal with pride.
Yeah.
So, and it's in three words, Own the Podium. So we just need to do something similar. Again, super simplistic. I understand there's a lot of holes in what I just said. But I'll keep it at that for right now.
No, I think it speaks to like two main things. There's a need for data. You know, the more data that we can kind of collect, the more we can make a case, and then that business proposition. You know, yes, that I think that you put it really well, where these outdoor spaces are perhaps viewed as a service to the community, in the same way that whether it's roads and infrastructure and healthcare and these types of things are a service for the community, but they're a lot more than that. And I think it's perhaps a branding or a marketing kind of angle that we just need to do a better job of kind of selling this as all the multitude of benefits that exist out there. And I think maybe for us, like as outdoor advocates and outdoor enthusiasts and outdoor professionals, I think maybe one of the challenges is that for us, it seems so simple. You know, we've bought into we've drunk the Kool-Aid in the sense that like, yeah, we get it. Like, this is really important. But I think sometimes that's maybe why I have such a struggle to essentially sell this to certain levels of government, is that to me, this is just a no-brainer. But to other people, it doesn't always come across that way.
Yeah. I mean, 80% of Canada's population is urbanized. 100%, well, maybe 99 point something, it has phones and we scroll, right? Like, even myself, like, you know, to be fully transparent with the audience right now, I love the irony of I spend most of my time behind a computer saying it's good to go outside.
Yeah.
So there are social forces. There are pressures. Look, our entire political landscape shifted in the last 4 months. Like, there are powerful forces that shape the day-to-day importance and thoughts of every Canadian. So I think it's important for ourselves, and you know, as like a reality check, but also like empathy for understanding for others, to remind ourselves, like, it's not because we had these experiences that others had them and that they get it right away. And it's upon us to just consistently hold a hand and be like, no, this really matters. This is nice. I would also say, like, it's not the job of the average guide to like advocate and request policy change. The job of the average outdoor program or professional or whatever is to offer experiences outside. That's the job. It's the job of associations to go towards the government and whatnot. And one of the most powerful way that associations can do that is by showcasing the people in the community and the stories and things like that. But I often find, and I'm hearkening back to the fragmentation aspect, there's a lot of very small organizations in the outdoor community. And I mean, the OCC is still a small organization that try to address so many things. And I think it links with like the attitude, I like to call the expedition attitude. Like if you're canoeing and your canoe breaks, well, you're going to just repair the canoe. That's what you do, you know? If you're hungry, you're just going to cook. So you're just going to do it. But the problem is, like, if each and every one of us in our corner just start doing something, we're not going far. And that's why we need to come together. We need to support the organizations that already exist, even if it looks like that the way they understand something is different than us and they don't really get it fully and all that. We are stronger together, and we need to send a fairly coherent message to the government, but also other important institutions so that they get it. Because they're busy, and if they hear five different messages, they'll hear none.
That's great. You know, for me, I think I'm quite familiar with, or getting more familiar with, the certification side of the Outdoor Council of Canada. It's been so wonderful to kind of hear about this other aspect of the Outdoor Council of Canada from you, Franz, and I really appreciate it. How can people get in touch with the OCC and learn more about what they offer and what they do?
Yeah, so we have our website, outdoorcouncil.ca. Now, again, I'll be transparent, and you said that the audience appreciates knowing more the details of running a not-for-profit. We are doing a lot of work on our digital infrastructure right now. So unfortunately, a couple of years ago, we had a developer, and they did a good job, but they left a few glitches in our system, and we've really been bogged down by those glitches. So actually, in the next like couple months, I'm working with another developer pretty closely on solving those glitches. I'm also we are revamping the content on our website. Right now the glitches are making like the membership experience not nearly as pleasant as it should be. So yeah, if you're listening to the podcast around the time where it's published, like go and check out our website and you'll get the gist of the information. But really, I expect that sometime midsummer, the information on the website will be much better and the experience on the website will be better.
Yeah. I know that many people listening will completely understand what that's like.
Yeah, what I've discovered in the past few years is computers are stupid. They don't think at all. So if it's not like exactly this thing, it's nothing. Yeah. And that's I don't know. It's so obvious, but no, it's not exactly that thing.
Exactly. I mean, we are outdoor people. That's our strength, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Franz. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation. I really appreciated it. And, you know, I'll say it on the air. Like, I know it's ahead of time, but congratulations for your 100th episode that's coming soon.
Thank you very much. This episode of the podcast was recorded on the traditional territory of the Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Musqueam, and Stolo Nation. My guest joined me from the traditional territory of the Blackfoot Confederacy. That's the Siksika, the Kainai, the Piikani, the Stoney Nakoda, and the Tsuut'ina. If you're curious to learn more about the traditional territory that you occupy and recreate on, then visit native-lands.ca. Like always, you can find the show on Facebook and Instagram at Frontlines MTB. You can also join the Facebook group at Advocates on the Frontlines of MTB. You can send me an email or audio file to info@frontlinesmtb.com. And once again, a huge thanks to Alexa, Jacob, and Drew for your continued support of the show financially. If you're interested in donating to the show, you can do so via PayPal. You can find a link in the show notes. In the show notes, you'll also find links to the Outdoor Council of Canada, as well as a direct link for the registration page for the Outdoor Council of Canada Field Leader Hiking Course that I'm going to be offering at the end of the month. That's May 31st, June 1st. It's a Saturday and Sunday. The course is going to be offered on the North Shore of Vancouver. Let me know if you have any questions about that. Music, as always, is by Lee Rosevear. Production notes by Jennifer Pride. Artwork is created by Brandon Gallagher-Watson and BGW Creative. And finally, I'm Brent Hillier. This is Frontlines. Thanks for listening, and happy trails.